for your mean, mean pride. What's up, America and the world? This is Binal of BinalofAmerica.com. Welcome to the second edition of Binal of America Audio. Big thanks to everybody who checked out last week's debut of BOA Audio with Stanton Friedman. We received lots of great feedback from the many listeners who downloaded it from BinalofAmerica.com. And if you haven't had a chance to do so yet, it's still available. You can do it right now. At BinalofAmerica.com, pretty much where you got this interview, I hope. You can find the Stanton Friedman interview, the debut of Binal of America Audio, so I suggest you check that out. This week, we have an amazing interview with Dr. Michael Sala. I was at X Conference. I was trying to get an interview with him. He was amazingly busy. He was hugely popular. People were just all over him. I could barely get near him even to talk to him. But finally, I pinned him down on Sunday afternoon, and I got a chance to talk to him. We sat down for about a half hour or so, and we were really riffing. And I listened to this interview, last week, I think, again, as I was preparing it for release, and I was completely blown away. I was trying to write down all the different things we covered, and at one point I said to myself, we have to be halfway through this interview. We've talked about so much stuff. And I looked, and we were about a quarter of the way through. So we covered a lot of ground. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. For those of you out there who don't know anything about Dr. Michael Sala, it's time that you learn something about him. He's the pioneer in the development of exopolitics, which is the scholarly study of the main actors, institutions, and processes associated with an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or the mass media. Dr. Sala is an internationally recognized scholar in geopolitics, conflict resolution, and U.S. foreign policy. He has authored more than 70 articles, chapters, and book reviews on peace, ethnic conflict, and conflict resolution. He has held academic appointments in the School of International Service and the Center for Global Peace at American University in Washington, D.C., the Department of Political Science at Australian National University in Canberra, Australia, and the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. He has a Ph.D. in Government from the University of Queensland, Australia, and an M.A. in Philosophy from the University of Melbourne, Australia. He has conducted research and fieldwork in the ethnic conflicts in East Timor, Kosovo, Macedonia, and Sri Lanka, and organized peacemaking initiatives involving mid-to-high-level participants in these conflicts. So he's a scholar, and a researcher, and an academic. And we sat down and we talked in Washington, D.C. at X Conference 2 on April 24th, 2005, all about exopolitics, ufology, and a host of other topics. So sit down and relax, because it's Binal and Dr. Michael Sala.
This is Tim Binal with BinalofAmerica.com, and I'm here with Dr. Michael Sala of the book Exopolitics. And he's been speaking here at X Conference, and I finally pinned him down for a while to chat with him. So welcome, Dr. Michael Sala.
Thanks, Tim.
Now, first of all, why don't you tell me about how you got into the whole UFO field and the exopolitics field in the first place?
Well, I was working in as a professor of international affairs at American University, and in 2001, I happened to listen to the Disclosure Project press conference that Stephen Greer organized, and that helped answer a lot of questions that I had about what it is that's really causing international conflict. And so with that awareness, I began to do some research and was getting more answers to some of the questions I had, and eventually I began to do some writing in the field, and so at that point I decided that this was something I would put my energies into full time.
I have a message board at my website, and I offer the opportunity for people to ask questions to any of the speakers if I would run into them, and one of the posters wanted to know what happened since you had to leave the university, or the university canceled your deal there, and if you found another job, and if you felt like you've experienced discrimination as a result of your work in the UFO field.
Oh, definitely, yes. There's been some prejudice, some bias just towards this topic. I mean, when I told the person who was in charge of me when I was researching this topic for the first time at American University, he said that this doesn't belong in a university and doesn't belong in the research center, that exopolitics was not something that any serious scholar would look at. And so it was very clear to me that working in a university environment was not really going to be helpful for me to do this research. So once I got my marching orders and my appointment wasn't renewed, I basically decided that I wouldn't take any more university appointments, that I'd just freelance, do my own thing, and start up my own institute in time. And so I'm really working on that at the moment.
Okay. And so you just got into the field really in like the last 3 or 4 years roughly, and what would you say your impression of the field of ufology is, the people and the other researchers and things, and how have you been, what has their reaction been to your work?
Well, it's kind of very tribal, that's the way I would just describe it. You have people who basically believe that UFO research should be conducted in a certain way, and it's very tribal. It's about, you know, you mark out the parameters for competent researchers, and people who go outside of those parameters are debunked, are criticised, and condemned as pseudoscientists, kooks, frauds, charlatans. And I was really surprised to see the way that it's done in this very unprofessional way. Because I mean, as an academic, I mean, I know what it's like to do research and to collaborate with others with different methodologies and different disciplines. And you know, as an academic, you do this automatically. So to come into this field and to see the kind of language that's used, it was kind of very, very surprising. As I said, it was kind of very tribal and very unprofessional in my view, and so I basically just continued to outline the methodology that I have and the approach, and defended that against the critics who do believe that ufology should be conducted in a way that, in my view, is very inappropriate.
Why don't you tell me about what you're talking about here this weekend at the X conference?
Well, this weekend what I talked about was the different ET races that we know about in terms of the testimonies of a variety of people, contactees, whistleblowers, remote viewers, for example, and look at the range of activities of extraterrestrials and what they're like and how many of them are there. And so basically what I did was I tried to create a profile on some of the most significant extraterrestrial groups that are interacting with the planet, based on the testimonies of these people. And so I created a profile on about 10 for the presentation this weekend, and discussed how they fell basically into two broad categories. One category was those ETs that have reached agreements or cooperation with the military-industrial complex, and those ET races that are basically outside of that framework of agreements.
Okay. What are you working on now?
Well, basically, with the papers that I put together, I put them on my website, let them be viewed by people who can then reply to me if they have any insights, anything to add. Then I can kind of get some feedback on the papers, but make them available. And then with when I have enough papers, I basically edit them for a book. And so I have enough papers now for a second book, and that's with the publisher now, and they've approved it. And so that'll come out in due time. So I'll be working on polishing that up in terms of editing and so forth. I'm also working on some courses that deal with exopolitics, introducing people to exopolitics, and also another course that deals with citizen diplomacy initiatives, getting people to understand that we needn't just be passive observers in this phenomenon, that we can be proactive, that we can actually play a role in establishing communications and interacting with different ET races. So that's what citizen diplomacy with extraterrestrials is all about as a course.
Now, I talked to Dr. Weber earlier, and why don't you tell me your definition of exopolitics, because I'm sure there's some people who are listening to the interview who are like, what is this exopolitics thing? So how would you define exopolitics?
Well, for me, exopolitics is the study of the key actors, the key institutions, and the key processes surrounding the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. That is what I think exopolitics needs to focus on, because we have a lot of information about that. When you go beyond that kind of definition and, say, define exopolitics in terms of the kind of relationships between different ET races out in the galaxy, then we're kind of getting into a more difficult area, because it's hard to get information on that. But I think we have a lot of information about the key actors, institutions and processes on Earth surrounding the ET presence.
All right, now, I've been following some of these stories that are coming out of the India Daily. I'm sure you must know about them. What do you think about that stuff that's coming out of India right now?
Well, that's very interesting. It's been a phenomenal rise in terms of the growth in circulation of the Daily India. It's become a journal that now, for example, it outranks some news journals like Al Jazeera in terms of international coverage. And so it looks very much like an important journal that is being read by an increasing number of people from around the planet. Now, the fascinating thing about it is that in the technology section, every day it runs one or more stories related to ETs, ET reverse engineering ET vehicles, mind control experiments or technologies based on ET information. So they're running these sorts of stories, and they seem to be stories that aren't created in a way which is to sensationalize the issues. It looks as though they're trying to ask some penetrating questions to try to get people thinking about these issues. So it makes me believe that the people behind the India Daily are really trying to acclimate the population to the extraterrestrial presence and to the technologies that that is associated with that. Who is behind the India Daily? Well, all sorts of explanations. It can be the Indian government trying to get out information. It can be a psychological psyop operation by military intelligence organizations who want this information to get out to the American public, but are using India as a distraction because these things are happening actually here. So that may be a way to get information out to kind of distract people. And it may be actually just ETs themselves working through some individuals who are very highly motivated and have some connection with some benign ET groups.
A big theme of the conference is disclosure, and it seems like that's been the evolution of ufology has gone from trying to prove UFOs are real to getting disclosure. Do you think disclosure as a formality will happen, and if so, like, how will it go down?
Well, I think disclosure is inevitable. I mean, there's been a growing number of people that are interested in this, that do the reading, they do the research, they attend the conferences, they listen to the interviews. So that is growing all the time. And so this movement of disclosure is gaining momentum. How it's going to happen, that's a key question. I mean, is it going to be a matter of the government making an announcement of the ET presence that's been covered up over 60 years? That's one format. It's one possibility. Another possibility is that it can be just the growth in the number of people who are sharing this information via internet and various groups form a social movement that basically builds up enough momentum and enough public interest and mass media interest to actually force the government to give this information out, or just have a number of people come forward disclosing what's happening. Or the third possibility is that we actually do have a mass contact event by ETs, and that has happened. We saw the Phoenix lights in 97, and we've seen video footage of up to 300 UFOs being sighted in Mexico City. So we have a number of possible scenarios for how disclosure is going to happen, but I mean, how it happens and when it happens are still open, but I mean, it's inevitable that it will happen.
What do you think is keeping the U.S. government from why are they keeping this secret for so long? What's your opinion on that?
Well, there are a number of different reasons we can give. I think the bottom line is that they don't know what the ET presence means. I think that they've been looking at this for 50 to 60 years, and I think that they have been trying to work out how to deal with this phenomenon and how to release it to the general public. And I don't think they've really come up to an answer themselves. I think what's happened is that there have been a number of different factions within the military intelligence community and the national security agencies who have taken varying positions on this. Some factions believe that while it's time to disclose, that people have a right to know, that we never intended to keep this secret for so long. Another faction believes that, well, we're really still not ready, that the public just has not shown sufficient interest in this, that the issues are just so profound, so transformative, that we don't want them to know. Another faction maybe say, well, the public should never know, because if they ever really knew, then they will just stop us from being able to deal competently with the national security threat posed by the extraterrestrials. And they are the ones that basically are most committed to the black project, to having these black projects run without any regulatory mechanisms put in place at all, without any congressional oversight at all, without any media scrutiny. So I think we have different factions who take varying positions on this phenomenon.
I'm sure you saw the Peter Jennings special. So what did you think of the Peter Jennings special?
Well, I think it really was kind of almost two programs wrapped into one. The first part of the program was all about the sightings phenomenon and how credible the witness reports were on the sightings, how you have competent witnesses, police officers and other senior officials who could testify as to the reality of this phenomenon, and they also depicted those that were critical of the evidence, really were kind of almost absurd. They would say things like, well, seeing is not believing, that even though you could see it and you had testimony of it and you had video footage and camera shots of it, that wasn't enough, that seeing is not believing. And that really came across as quite absurd. So I think the first part of the show was quite good at describing the reality of the UFO phenomenon and really making debunkers and skeptics look foolish. The second half of the program basically flipped it around. It did the reverse. It made those that were defending things such as alien abductions or the Roswell crash look like they were out there to make money, that they were there really to kind of profit from this, that they weren't serious researchers, and that you had the skeptics looking as though they were the more sensible. They were coming up with arguments which sounded plausible, but really, when you look at them closely, didn't have merit. But as far as the viewer was concerned, they had the debunkers looking as though they were more competent, and you had the researchers looking as though they were out there trying to make a buck and trying to kind of capitalize on this phenomenon.
And do you think that was a result of, was it intentional, do you think, or just a result of being poorly made?
I think it was intentional. I think it reflected, as I said earlier, that there are different factions involved here. And one faction wanted people to learn about the UFO phenomenon, that this was real, it's not going to go away, and the sightings are happening. So I think that faction basically succeeded in having the first part of the program give a kind of pretty credible description of the UFO sightings phenomenon. And I think the other faction that wants to debunk and keep the cover-up going basically arranged for the second part of the program to basically present its view. So I think what you have is a balance. You have two factions promoting their agenda, and so the program itself is very uneven.
Where do you see the future of ufology, the field, going? And can it? I've heard, I think it was Stan Friedman said that ufology's own worst enemy is itself. So do you think it can survive the turf wars? And there's not too many young generation researchers getting into it. Where do you think you see the next step of the field going?
I think ufology is definitely heading in the direction of exopolitics. People are basically accepting that we have enough evidence, that there's sufficient sightings data that is there that can be scrutinized, can be analyzed. So there's so much there that we don't need any more to accept that the UFO phenomenon is real. So I think people are now looking to the political process that makes it possible for the UFO phenomenon to continue as something that isn't disclosed to the general public. So people are looking more for evidence about this political process. They're looking at things like some of the key documents, the Majestic documents that the Woods team are releasing that shows how the cover-up is conducted. They're looking at some of the exopolitics research that researchers such as myself are producing, looking at the testimonies of whistleblowers describing how the whole ET phenomenon is covered up. And so people are gravitating towards that. People are also looking more at some of the alternative sources of information, like the contactee reports or the channelers or the whistleblowers or the independent archaeology reports. So people are gravitating towards that as well. So I think ufology will begin to look more seriously at that phenomenon. And finally, like your question, I think you don't see many young UFO researchers. You tend to see the kind of older researchers who come in kind of at the end of their careers, and I think there's good reason for that, because younger researchers have families, they have careers, they need an income to be able to put food on the table, to be able to pay for college education of their kids. So they don't want to threaten their careers. So when you take on this this research, you do threaten your career. If you're a journalist or an academic or a scientist and you start to speak openly about UFOs, you do threaten your career. You have a price to pay if you continue to push this this research. And so those who do it in the kind of middle of their career, such as myself, do pay a price. And in my own case, I actually did lose a university affiliation because of this, and find that getting a new university appointment would mean that I would basically have to commit myself to not doing this kind of research, or doing it on the sidelines and being kind of an amateur in it, which would mean that it wouldn't be good quality research. So what you do tend to see more is that you have people coming into this UFO phenomenon at the end of their careers, when their kids have been put through college, when they don't have to worry about having a steady income to be able to finance themselves during their retirement. And so that's when you have people coming forward and disclosing this information. So that's why you have a disproportionate number of older people. But you have a lot of younger people now, you know, like Steve Bassett, Stephen Greer, a younger generation that are coming forward, and they don't really care too much about careers. I mean, they're more interested in kind of getting the truth out there.
Of the various evidences, you get your witness testimony and whistleblowers, documents, trace cases, just plain old sightings, video. How would you rank the best to the worst as far as quality goes?
Well, if we're talking about exopolitics rather than ufology, so if we're talking about exopolitics in terms of a political understanding of the extraterrestrial presence, and then I would go definitely for the whistleblower testimonies and for the documents, the majestic documents that have been leaked to the general public. I would say between those two, you have two very strong sources of information. I think we also have some of the contactee reports, the people who have actually had physical interaction with ETs, that they sometimes have evidence in terms of photographs or film footage of the extraterrestrials. So I think those are very credible reports, and we can look at those. We also have some of the remote viewing sources of evidence. I think that is probably also very helpful. I think that the credibility of that may not be as high as, say, the whistleblowers and the contactees or the documents, but still the remote viewing data needs to be looked at. Then you have such exotic sources of information like channeling, telepathic communication. I think that is also something that needs to be looked at. It's probably at the weakest end because it's very subjective. We don't know for sure how accurate these channelers are, but I think it's still something that should be looked at and not dismissed outright.
And from your research, what do you think of the abduction phenomenon?
I think it's very serious, it's very extensive. Extraterrestrials are abducting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people within the United States, if not elsewhere. The purposes of those abductions are something that we should be concerned about. People are being taken up into ships, they're being implanted with all sorts of devices, they're being subjected to mind control programming, and so we're not quite sure of exactly how extensive the control being exercised by the ETs over these individuals are. And we know that the military are watching this phenomenon very closely, are very concerned about that, and in many cases abducting or re-abducting the abductees to find out exactly what it is that the ETs have done. But I would say that the ETs performing these abductions are certainly not groups of ETs that we should openly welcome, that we need to look at them with very critical eyes. We need to scrutinise their behaviour, their motivations, and exactly what it is that they're wanting to achieve through these programs.
And what about some of the more peripheral areas that sometimes get tied into the UFO field, like the crop circles and the cattle mutilations?
Well, the crop circles, I think, are quite an interesting phenomenon. They certainly do point to some extraterrestrial intelligence being behind them. I don't think that they would be just created they certainly haven't been created by the kind of Doug and Dave team going around with some wooden planks and constructing these in the fields throughout England and elsewhere. I think there's some more esoteric explanation for it. I think the extraterrestrial hypothesis is probably the simplest explanation. I mean, you might say, well, this has been created by some kind of a psi operation to try to distract people from the extraterrestrial phenomenon, but I don't think that that's a very plausible explanation. I think the extraterrestrial one is the simplest explanation. And it's certainly the degree of complexity in these crop circles and the way in which the crops themselves exhibit behaviours or signs that suggest that there's some otherworldly source that has given those crop circles the particular patterns and has affected the kind of the stems of the crops that are being flattened. I think I would go for the extraterrestrial source. As for the cattle mutilations, I think that what that suggests is that there is some need for the material, the genetic material, and the organs and the blood tissues of cattle, and because cattle are very similar to humans in terms of the DNA, it would point to some extraterrestrial race being very interested in this material. I think the greys have been referred to by a number of abductees as being a race that has used cattle parts for various purposes, which would be the means by which they replenish their bodies through absorption through the skin. It seems that possibly the greys and other extraterrestrial races may use these cattle parts to create vats filled with nutrients and the DNA material of cattle to be able to absorb this material through their skin when they immerse themselves in these large vats.
Now, after you left the university, you went to Hawaii and you were doing some work there, so why don't you tell me about that?
Well, in Hawaii, what I'm doing there is moving much more into the practical field in terms of getting people to prepare themselves for extraterrestrial contact. I believe that extraterrestrial contact is inevitable in terms of open interaction between humanity and a large number of extraterrestrial races. So what I'm doing now is putting my energy into preparing people for that. And I think that doing things such as learning about different ET races, doing seminars where you begin to familiarize yourself with these races, do things like interact with non-human intelligences such as dolphins. So we do dolphin swims, because with the dolphin swims, people are able to experience at first hand a non-human intelligence, a species that is very evolved, that is capable of telepathic communication, that is capable of using emotions and sonar abilities in ways that we cannot fully fathom. And so you're interacting with them in an environment which is out of the norm. So this is really, to my mind, probably the best way for individuals who want to take a crash course in how they can prepare themselves for contact with extraterrestrial races. Come to Hawaii, swim with the dolphins, learn about the different ET races, and just enjoy the aloha spirit of Hawaii.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap it up now. So thank you very much. Why don't you throw a plug in here for your book and for your website and for any information people can get from you.
Well, thanks, Tim. Anyone wanting to learn more about my work, the books, the seminars, the courses, the best place to go is to my websites. I have two websites. One is www.exopolitics.org, exopolitics.org, or the other site is www.galacticdiplomacy.com. So they can go to either of those websites and they can find out more information on any of those things that I've talked about. So I want to thank you, Tim, for doing the interview and giving me time to share this information and for being a vehicle for helping people become aware of this this phenomenon. And it's people like you who play the vital role of getting this out into the broad public arena, because the mass media really isn't doing the job. So it's really the initiative of those like you who get the word out. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
So there you have it. That was Dr. Michael Sala. Big thanks to Dr. Sala for sitting down and talking to us. Next week on Banal of America Audio, Alfred Weber, father of exopolitics.